Shakti Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. And all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Read it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 17th chapter, and verses number 10 through 11. So because it's a two-verse chant, what I'll do, because we are going to be short for time, is I will read the second verse first by myself, and then the first verse we can read together as we usually do. Esha ragyam paro dharmo yartanam arti nigraha atha inam vidyishyami bhuta druham asattamam. Yasya rastre prajav sarvas Vasyante sadyavyasadvi dubi tasya matasya nashanti kirtya ayur bhagogati yasya rastre praja sarvas Vasyante sad Asha dubi Tasya matasya nashyanti Kirtir ayur bhagogati Yasya rastre praja sarvas Trasyante sad yavasadhubi Tasya matasya nashanti Kirtir ayur bhagogati. Please chant. Mataji's, please. Yes, else? Yasya, one whose, Rashtre, in the state, Raja, living beings, Sava, one and all, Trasyante, are terrified, Sadvi, O chaste one, Asadubhi, by the miscreants. Tasya, his. Matasya, of the illusioned. Nashyanti, vanishes. Kirti, fame. Ayu, duration of life. Bhaga, fortune. Gati, good rebirth. So we'll stop there because that is the end of the verse that we all chanted together. So we go now to the purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki. So just to set the scene for a few moments, Mother Cow is now speaking to the bull, and she's feeling great commiseration, great sorrow for him. He's only got one leg on. He originally had three. And that actually symbolizes very clearly that austerity, mercy, truthfulness, austerity, mercy, and cleanliness are virtually gone, even though it's the beginning of Kali Yuga. So she's speaking at this time. O chaste one, the king's good name, duration of life, and good rebirth vanish when all kinds of living beings are terrified by miscreants in his kingdom. It is certainly the prime duty of the king to subdue first the sufferings of those who suffer. Therefore, I must kill this most wretched man because he is... Parikshit is speaking, okay? And when he says, O chaste one, he's referring to Mother Cow, and he's speaking to her. My apologies to you for that. Therefore, I must kill this most wretched man because he is violent against other living beings. That's the translation. Purport. When there is some disturbance caused by wild animals in a village or town, the police or others take action to kill them. Similarly, it is the duty of the government to kill at once all bad social elements such as thieves, dacoits, and murderers. The same punishment is also due to animal killers because the animals of the state are also the praja. Praja means one who has what? Say stuff up there. Who has taken his birth in the state. And this includes both men and animals. Any living being who takes birth in a state has the primary right to live under the protection of the king. The jungle animals are also subject to the king, and they also have a right to live. So what to speak of domestic animals like the cows and the bulls who perform a service for the society? Cows give milk, they give urine, they give stool. All of these things are used in different ways for the maintenance of society individually. Any living being, if he terrifies other living beings, is a most wretched subject. And the king should at once kill such a disturbing element. As the wild animal is killed when it creates disturbances, similarly, any man who unnecessarily kills or terrifies the jungle animals or other animals must be punished at once. By the law of the Supreme Lord, all living beings, in whatever shape they may be, are the sons of the Lord, daughters too, by the way, and no one has any right to kill another animal unless it is so ordered by the codes of natural law. Those are the rules, the regulations, the orders, the laws of God. The tiger can kill a lower animal for his subsistence, but a man cannot kill an animal for his subsistence. There is an extension of that idea, and I think it will come up in a few moments. But generally, we do not kill animals for our subsistence. However, there are emergency situations where there is nothing else except animals. Of course, if a person is very saintly, so saintly that he refuses to kill any animal, then he can absorb himself in the Supreme Lord, meditate on the feet of the Lord, and go back home, back to Godhead. But that's not the most of us. Most of us still have a long way to go to reach that high, exalted, elevated state. So we may have to protect ourselves. And protection means do whatever you have to do. There are different ways of protecting. And each person may be skilled in one way or another. Some people can protect themselves just by mantra, chanting the Nrsingha prayer. Another person may protect himself because he's a kshatriya. He pulls out a sword or he pulls out a knife and he wrestles or tussles with the animal that he has to kill for his subsistence. So, as I said, there are different situations. But when one kills for his subsistence, there should not be any pleasure in this. Like the hunter goes out, generally speaking, not for eating, but they go out for pleasure. The pleasure of seeing the animal die and the pleasure of feeling that he is superior to the animal. This is what is wanted for the person who wants to lord it over. Think himself higher. Think himself better, greater. Just see, I killed that animal. That lion was there. He thought he could kill me, but I'm better, I'm greater, I'm higher. I killed him. Ha, ha, ha. So this is the mentality. When I was a young man, I was 13, 14, I had an uncle who was a hunter. And to help me feel more grown up, he wanted to take me on a hunting trip. So I went on the trip. I had a rifle. I felt really the lord of the land. I never had held a rifle in my hand. So so he went out. We had a dog with us too, his hunting dog. So the dog got a beat on the smell of a squirrel. And he pointed, they called them pointers. He pointed his nose in the direction and then took off after the squirrel. And as he was running toward, my uncle said, "Please, shoot, shoot." So I shot. I was so off the mark, you can't even believe it. Because at heart, I didn't want to do that. And so therefore, how can you kill the animal that you really don't want to kill? So he said, "Don't worry about it. You'll get better." I said, "Yeah, this is my last hunting trip." So it's true. True story. And that was it. So when we came back to the home, like my aunt and my uncle, my father and mother, they looked at me and said, "How'd you do?" I said, "Terrible." He says, "Well, you'll get better." "No, I won't. So I'm not going again." So that is it. So that is the law of God, who has created the law that a living being subsists by eating another living being. Thus, the vegetarians are also living by eating other living beings. Sometimes people wonder, how are the vegetarians eating other living beings? Well, every time you take a drink of water, and there are a number of living entities in the water, sometimes thousands, take a super microscope, you'll actually see so many things you're eating. You might not want to drink any water anymore. So you see, sometimes when I talk to the scientists, they say, "Well, you know, if you can't see God, then how do you know that he really exists?" I say, "Is seeing really only the way of believing?" He says, "As far as I'm concerned, that is the only way of believing." I say, "Okay, Take a look at your palm, palm of your hand, like this, okay? So he looks at it. I say, what do you see? He says, nothing. I say, are you sure? He says, yeah, of course I'm sure. Okay, now take your palm and put it under a high-intensity microscope and take a look and see what you see. So put it under the microscope. He says, yeah, there are thousands of things running around my hand. So there's other things in this world which you don't see. So don't write out the fact that because you cannot see God, that he doesn't exist. You know, like the sun is shining just by its own individual desire. The moon is coming out only by its own desire. All these things supposedly have their own desire. Are you kidding? This is going on in a very causal fashion. Cause, effect, cause, effect. We can predict where the moon will be tomorrow and the day after. Regulated, very much directed. And with a definite purpose. Everything has purpose in this world. Do things give themselves purpose? How can they? They have to be guided by a higher intelligence, which will give them that purpose, even if they don't even know why they're doing certain things. But they do it because God is all-powerful, and he moves them. He makes them go where he wants to go, which will be in the interest of his particular plan. Okay? The illusion king, or executive head. Did I miss something? I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for catching me on that. The Ishopanishad directs that one should live by the direction of the Lord. Listen, he's all powerful. He's all knowing. He doesn't make mistakes. We do. We make mistakes. We're in illusion. We have incorrect perception. And we have a tendency to cheat. But the Lord doesn't. And therefore, as it is just mentioned, the Isopanishads, that one should live by the direction of the Lord and not at one's sweet will. It's really not so sweet, by the way. Most of the things that we will on our own, which are whimsical and just off the top of our head, and we cling to them as being important and valuable simply because they come out of our head. And I am the Lord of all I survey. Everything really belongs to me, and it's only a matter of time when I will have more and more and more. I have one car today. Soon I will have two cars. And then I will have three cars. And then, like that actor Jerry Seinfeld, you may have 75 Porsches if you go on in that mad, insane mentality. So, yeah, I have more cars. I have more homes. Yeah, you know, like that fighter, the prize fighter, he was a world champion. Can't remember his name. But he has six mansions, one in different countries. And he feels like a lord because today I go to this mansion. Tomorrow I go to that mansion. Just see my opulence. This is the insane mentality. They live on the top of the false ego. That is their only happiness. Like some people get happiness, you know, you take some tasty food, okay, that makes me happy. Or I see some beautiful roses or primroses or Nagkampa flowers, and they smell so fragrant, and see beautiful scenery. So, but all this is like a very temporary matter. And though we are happy for a moment, we can't say we're not happy. We're happy, but for a moment, and the next moment, when we're not getting the pleasure, what are we? We're in anxiety to find another pleasure because it is the nature of the living entity to enjoy. If he gets one kind of joy, that wears out. Like you have ice cream. You take the ice cream, the first taste, oh, it's so good. Then the second one, oh, that's even better. And the third one, nah, that's not as good. Then the fourth, by the time you kept to the tenth swallow, it's already become flat. Why? Because the taste buds become exhausted. And when the taste buds get exhausted, we don't taste. And therefore, that's the end of that. Well, what do? I got to find a different kind of sense pleasure. Because by nature, I am a joy-seeking or joy-filling person. And so that's what happens. People are walking, running, jogging around looking for something to enjoy, to keep the joy tendency alive. And they're always in anxiety because they may not find that pleasure that they're looking for. Some people are so attached to certain foods that, these are true stories, because they've been told to me. First of all, get up sometimes early in the morning, 1 or 2, not to chant Hare Krishna. He's got this idea in his mind of getting this big, delicious piece of chocolate cake. And it's on his mind. And he's on bed. And he turns one way, and he turns another. He's becoming restless, so restless that he can't bear it. He can't stand it. He can't live through the night in such anxiety. So he gets up, puts on some clothes, goes downstairs, gets in his car, and goes to the first market that's nearby. It's closed. Closed at midnight. Oh, where are we going to go now? So he goes to another market. That one's closed. Now he's really in anxiety because maybe all the markets are closed. Then he remembers, oh, yes, there's one. I know it's an all-night market. I think it's Bonds. So he gets into the car, and they still have that cake, which they got 2 days ago. It's all practically dried out. But it doesn't matter because it's chocolate cake, and he can't wait to sink his teeth into that chocolate and go, it's so good. Now I'm happy. Now I'm so fulfilled. So just see, he had to drive a half hour to get to the market to get the cake. And then what's worse, he ate the whole cake. Just so he wouldn't have a craving the next day. Well, the next day he was completely sick. He couldn't have a craving. Didn't even want to eat. So that's the horrible situation of becoming attached to different objects of the senses. So a devotee knows that, yes, if he wants some chocolate cake, he can have it, but have it in moderation. Have it in a degree so that the mind will be satisfied, and at the same time, one can go on with one's work. One doesn't have to take off from work, and one doesn't have to be in anxiety. This is a very wonderful quality of the Brahman, to have self-control. Self meaning, the false self, meaning to control. Excuse me. Control the tongue, control the eyes, control the nose, control the skin, control the genitals. When we have control over all of these, then what happens is that we actually do become a master. That's what a master is. One who can say yes, he can say no, he can say I couldn't care less, I couldn't care more. It's all an illusion in the sense that it's here today, it's gone tomorrow, so why should I get excited over something that I'm just going to be in anxiety about? So I'll taste it and then give it up, and that's the end of that. So this is what we're all striving for. Srila Prabhupada never said that we should not, you know, like the Mayavadis, just, you know, fast for 10 days on nothing or air or water. No, he expressed a much more reasonable position that we could enjoy, but within limitations. So we have to keep that in mind. We have to ask ourselves when we sit down at the prasadam room and we put things on our plate, is this moderation? Of course, if it's once a month, you haven't had that one food, you could go a little overboard. It didn't say, you can, as long as you fast the next day, then it's workable. Then we can handle it. We can do that. So if Archana would please tell me where I left off, he's very good at that. He's the prompter. You know, like in the dramas, the stage plays, they got a prompter in the front. And if the actor forgets his lines, he tells him, where did I leave off, Archana? Was it at the end of the paragraph? I don't think so. What did he say? Come here. Okay. Can you point it out? Okay, fine. Thank you. A man can subsist on varieties of grains, fruits, and milk ordained by God. And there is no need of animal food, save and except in particular cases. The illusion king or executive head, even though sometimes advertised as a great philosopher and learned scholar, will allow slaughterhouses in the state without knowing that torturing poor animals clears the way to hell for such foolish kings or executive heads, because they are encouraging They're contributing. They're urging people, yes, go, eat meat. It's good. It's good protein. Gives you muscles. Makes you like the lion. What about the gorilla? He doesn't eat any of that. Never mind the gorilla. It doesn't fit in with my argument. So the executive head must always be alert to the safety of the prajas, both man and animal, and inquire whether a particular living being is harassed at any place by another living being. The harassing living being must at once be caught and put to death, as shown by Maharaj Pariksit at the beginning of this several verses back. When Maharaj Pariksit, he wandered into the secluded place. There was nobody else there except the cow and the bull, who was standing on one leg. And there was this person dressed up like a king. A king is supposed to be the representative of God. And he was beating the cow, and he was beating the bull. And when the King Pariksit, he saw this. What is this? How dare you do this in my kingdom? These creatures are under my protection, and you have the audacity to beat them? Helpless, innocent creatures? You have to be killed. No ifs, no buts, no maybe, or should I, or exceptions. No, he was ready. Of course, he would ask a few questions, and we will see as the story goes on. But his immediate response, his immediate reaction was one of protection, was one of comforting, was one of feeling sorrow for those animals who were being hurt in his domain. In other words, he had a responsibility. His domain was a place for people to live in peace and love and kindness and in caring for one another so that there would be happiness, real happiness. His domain was a domain in which people would learn spiritual life. King Pariksit, as we know, is the grandson of Arjuna. He was taught not only reading, writing, and arithmetic, and geometry, and all these different subjects, but he was also taught spiritual subject matter, the most important. How to feel for other creatures. If you study, what are they feeling? How can I help them? How can I assist them? How can I make their life either more comfortable? How can I make their life more philosophical? How can I help this person become less attached to all the things he's attached to, and which is involving him in such a way that he's being wrapped up or enslaved by the material energy? How can I help him? This is the duty of a great leader. Lord Ramachandra used to take a walk incognito. Nobody would know who he is. And he would go to find out what people are saying about his rulership, his leadership. He would go to see how people are attached or non-attached. He would see what they need. And he would help to give them what they need. He had Brahmins, of course. They would lecture. They would give guidance. They would give direction. Am I up to the people's government? Okay. The people's government, or government by the people, should not allow killing of innocent animals by the sweet will of foolish government men. Sweet will means to be capricious, to be whimsical, to be, I'll do what I want. I'm a lord. Whatever I think is good, whatever I think is right, whatever I think will help, because I am the lord of all I survey. This is the mentality. And you say, no, like a president, you say, no, this is wrong. No, I don't do wrong things. You're wrong. I'd like to say, the news said that. Never mind the news. It's all fake news. This is our president. It's fake news. If it favors him, it's true news. If it is against him, it's fake news. Even if they can prove it with 1,000 different proofs. No, I do no wrong. So, they must know the codes of God, as mentioned in the revealed scriptures. Maharaj Pariksit quotes here that according to the codes of God, the codes means the laws, the rules, the regulations, the codes of God, the irresponsible king or state executive jeopardizes his good name, duration of life, power and strength, and ultimately his progressive march toward a better life and salvation after death. Such foolish men do not even believe in the existence of a next life. Many of them don't even believe in God, although they go to church, or they go to the synagogue, or they go to the mosque. They put on a show. Most of politics is all show business. To make people think you're this, to make people think you're that, you're good, you're great, you're grand, you're glorious, you're spiritual, you're well-behaved, you have the nice responses which make you appear to be very very kind. But in the heart of hearts, they will favor laws that kill human beings, like the abortion. It favors, yes, kill the baby. He has no, can't defend himself. So these things, of course, are... Also, it's very interesting to see how that abortion... At one point, many people were in favor of it. But now many, many more people are now very much in disfavor. In fact, there are different cities and governments which are definitely going against it. They're creating their own laws, which are then being challenged in the Supreme Court. While commenting on this particular verse, we have in our presence the statement of a great modern politician who has recently died, recently means going back to the 1970s, I think, and left his will, which discloses his poor fund of knowledge of the codes of God mentioned by Maharaj Pariksit. The politician was so ignorant of the codes of God that he writes, quote, "I do not believe in any such ceremonies, and to submit to them, even as a matter of form, would be hypocrisy and an attempt to delude ourselves and others. I have no religious sentiment in the matter." So, in effect, he's saying, I don't believe in God. I don't care about that. I believe in what I think is good for the people, and I know what's good for the people because I am truly the leader of the people. So, when you have people like that in office, it is very, very difficult for a country or a city, a state, to be, the people of it, to be happy, genuinely joyful, ever peaceful, really strong from within. You can't, because they're doing everything against the desire of the Lord. From my own personal experience, whenever I went against the desires of the Lord, I remember suffering. And it would come into my mind, yes, I shouldn't have done that, but I did it anyway. I thought maybe he'll let me get away with it this time. You know, I was thinking. But no, he never let me get away with it. And therefore there would be pain and the suffering and sorrow and difficulty. And so after a while I got the message, you know, after maybe 75, 80 years, I got the message that they don't go against the desires of the Lord. You'll suffer for it. And the more you keep going against, the more intense the pain is going to get. Because Krishna wants you back home, back to Godhead. And you're not going to get back by violating his rules and regulations and laws unless so told by the Lord himself to do that. So this is the was my predicament. And it brought me to a condition, to a state where I don't have any material desires now, at least none that I know of. There may be 1,000 waiting in the wings that I don't, that I'm not aware of. That's possible. But as far as my awareness goes, my consciousness goes, I have no material desires anymore. The only thing I desire, basically, is to do what I'm doing now, to serve the devotees as a way of serving the Supreme Lord, and to beg the Lord to please inspire everyone I see with a desire to love you, to serve you, to honor you, to glorify you, to bow down to you. That's what I live for. And Krishna is pleased. He never says, no, that's not a good thing. He doesn't give me any pain or suffering for that. In fact, he increases the bliss, increases the joy, increases the peace, the happiness. So when you see me running around doing this and that, it's very selfish because all I want is more bliss, more peace, more joy, more happiness. But I know it also gives Krishna peace, more peace, more bliss, more happiness. And he loves this relationship with his disciples, with his devotees. So therefore, our business is that it has one fold. To continue to please Krishna, to increase, intensify the bliss he already has, And when we do that, and we do that without any desire for any return, well, I've given you this, Lord, now you owe me. You got to give me back, you know. No. The joy is in the giving. When we give something and we do it with our whole heart without any expectation of return, any demand for return, or any kind of condition that he must make a return, if we do it in that state of mind, then we are only and simply just a simple servant, or a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. As Lord Chaitanya says, you know, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya. I'm not a... What's the next one? Shudra, yes. Well, there's a Vaishya and there's a Shudra. So, or I'm not... He says, I'm not a brahmachari. You know, I'm not a householder. I'm not a vanaprastha. And I'm not a sannyasi. Although he was a sannyasi. But he never identified himself with that cloth. He thought of himself as what? Servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of the gopis. That's all of our position. And if we think of ourselves as just and only simple servants, we'll give pleasure to God, and that pleasure will resound in our hearts. And when it resounds and jubilates and bubbles, we will feel such, the joy of Krishna will become our joy. And we see that in the kirtans. So many devotees just almost crying, flooded with love, jumping up and down. People who would like to sit all day. But suddenly you hear the drums going, boom, 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 boom. And you just get off your feet. You clap, and the birds of sin take off. So, therefore... This practice, this policy that Srila Prabhupada gave us, this system, is fantastic. We should never underrate it, underestimate it, but should be so grateful that he has allowed us to have it. Yeah, otherwise go to some other temples, you see the Mayavad temples, nothing, just... I know, I used to run one of them. You're looking at the horse's mouth. So, yeah, that's it. No kidding. So after you've done that for 2 hours, then everybody is ready to go to sleep. And they do. I remember when there was a Christmas meditation not too far away. So I was out of the movement for 3 years. And I went to that meditation. And I looked around after about a half hour. 75% of the people who were in the meditation, I should have brought my tape recorder, and I could have let everybody listen to all this great, great meditation, which is going to take them right into the supreme domain of hell. Okay. So where am I, Archita Prabhu? A little louder. I'm old and... Oh, screen? I can't even turn my neck. Okay. What is that first word there? Okay, got it. Got it. Thank you very much. Contrasting these statements of a great politician in the modern age with those of Maharaj Pariksit, we find a vast difference. Maharaj Pariksit was pious according to the scriptural codes, whereas the modern politician goes by his personal belief and sentiments. When you see those people, run the other way. They are deadly. And we should not think we're so smart and so elevated and so advanced that we won't fall for it. Lord Chaitanya kept saying, don't go near them. Don't associate with them. They are very, especially some of these Mayavadis who've got the scriptures memorized. They can defeat you in argument, but that doesn't mean they are very pleasing to Krishna. That's all they got, is the joy or the pleasure of the false ego knowing, I'm better than him, I defeated him, he's down, I'm up. This is not our business. Our business is only to try harder and harder to give pleasure and more pleasure to Krishna. So, yes. Any great man of the material world is, after all, a conditioned soul. Did I get a wrong? Okay. He is bound by his hands and feet by the ropes of material nature. And still the foolish conditioned soul thinks of himself as free to act as by his whimsical sentiments. That's why everybody's suffering like anything. Head diseases, nose diseases, eye diseases, mouth diseases, teeth diseases, disease, 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 dis-ease. That's because they put Krishna ill at ease, they got dis-ease. Okay? So the conclusion is that people in this time of Maharaj Parikshit were happy. And the animals were given proper protection because the executive head was not whimsical or ignorant of God's law. Foolish, faithless creatures try to avoid the existence of the Lord and proclaim themselves secular at the cost of valuable human life. To claim yourself secular means that I don't believe in God. I believe only in matter. Secular, that's what the secular world means, the world of matter. The human life is especially meant for knowing the science of God. But foolish creatures, especially in this age of Kali, instead of knowing God scientifically, make propaganda against religious belief, as well as the existence of God, even though they are always bound by the laws of God, by the symptoms of birth, death, old age, and disease, and I might again add, lots and lots of miseries. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there anyone who has a question or a comment that they would like to make? Correction, if you'd like. There's a question there. Anybody? No? 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 Somebody's pointing. You have a question? Who are we talking about? And over there, well, come, ask, give them, oh, I see the microphone. I got it. Yes, go ahead.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Could you talk more about the importance of cow protection, Maharaj?
I'm sorry, what did he say? Something about cow protection, but what did he say about it? Huh? Talk more? About it. Well,
more about cow protection, please.
I need to give. That's a whole big subject. And but cow protection, we can protect the cows by not eating the meat, by encouraging other people to not eat the meat. You can encourage them if they're having a little difficulty wanting to give it up. Tell them to go online and to see some of the PETA videos showing how cows are killed. You know, they're turned upside down, hoisted up. Clamped on the leg, and they go on a conveyor belt, and somebody is there with a cleaver and just slits the throat, and they continue on the conveyor belt. They go down, somebody slits the belly. Need I say more? That is it. Thank you so much. Any other questions, please come up. I don't want to stop everyone from their service. Jai, thank you so much. I found it.